This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me is Darius Thomas.
Hold on, I got somebody at the door. Hold on.
Every time you create a video, a graphic, or even a photo, you're actually telling a story. Today's guest, Jasmine Blevins, producer and editor for Features and Storytelling at the Los Angeles Chargers, walks us through exactly how to challenge your storytelling.
I'm going to go to the time that it is. Justin, you got a time?
Let's go 43.
Perfect.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit Baller Effects on YouTube and get started today.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Creative Sports Podcast. We have a great guest for you today. We have Jasmine Blevins, who is a producer editor for Features and Storytelling at the LA Chargers. Jasmine, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Awesome. So we'll just jump straight in. We always like to talk about how we got to where we are now. So just kind of walk us through what your journey was to get to the point today as a producer editor at the Chargers.
Sure. So back when I was 17 years old, about to go into college, had just gotten into USC, my parents lightly suggested that getting a job might be a good thing to do, to have a little money before I was a freshman in college. And so one of the jobs that was open to me was at my church, actually doing the video and camera, learning to produce, doing light and sound and things like that. And I'd already had a little bit of experience with that in high school, having been a part of the advanced theater ensemble at my high school, Windward, which is in the LA area, West LA area, private school up there. And so I had the opportunity to really engage with lighting, with sound, theater in particular. And I just thought, okay, I can make that easy switch. And so I did that for my church and I still do it today. And that's where I started, just learning cameras, learning everything about them, how to turn them on. And it was really, I go to a big church. So it was live production, 7 cameras going at a time, handhelds, all of that. And so I really got into it that way. And when I got to USC, I had the opportunity to kind of do the same thing, but for the football team. So for those of you who don't know, pretty much every NFL team, college team has what's called a video operations department. And they use broadcast cameras or cameras that go into the sky basically to film the games and film practice. They're the people that put together those string outs for the coaches, string outs for players when they're doing drills, and the people who help the athletes that you see every day get better. And so I had the opportunity to join them. And then when football season was over, I realized, okay, well, now I need another source of income. And I got into the more artsy side of it for USC Athletics. And that was kind of the stuff that you see on social media, the commercials, the cool transition type hype video things. And I was able to work for them, and I was doing women's basketball and track mainly while I was there, while dipping my toe in the other sports as well. Again, just learning how to shoot, how to edit different types of things. And then the pandemic hit, obviously, and I was still working for USC Athletics at the time. And then I got an opportunity from one of my classes at USC, where one of the head producers at Spectrum Sportsnet, who does Backstage Lakers, Backstage Dodgers, he came to our class and talked, and I emailed him and I asked him about this opportunity that he was talking about in our class. And I got to interview for it, send in some of the work that I had done for USC, and I got that job. So I was a PA cutting, filming, producing segments for Spectrum Sportsnet and Backstage Lakers, Backstage Dodgers while I was there. And I did that all up until I graduated from USC, worked a little bit more still at my church, still with USC Athletics and Spectrum Sportsnet until about July, where I applied for the PA position at the Los Angeles Chargers, secured that, And was able to just work that entire season, learn even more just about the business of sports and the industry, especially the NFL, which is huge, huge when it comes to just the business side of what it really means to make sports content, and learning under what I still believe today to be the best social media and video team in the NFL. And from there, went back to SC for a couple years, working with them in their football, women's basketball, track and field, and really all the other 19 sports that they have over there. And then the Chargers called me back, wanted me to come back. And it was just opportunity to grow, especially because I'm a part of their long form team. Again, features and storytelling, where now I do, last year did the show called All In. And this year, building another long form show for them. And that's really what I wanted to do. And they gave me the opportunity to do so. And I'm happy to be back here.
Awesome. At what point did you, like, in your mind, so I know that you were getting all this different experience while you were in college. At what point did you know for sure that you wanted to, like, pursue a career in this? Because sometimes we have people who intern for two or three, four years, and they go off to do something else because, you know, it's just something to do while they're in college. But when did you really know that this is something that you wanted to pursue?
Right. At first, to be honest, especially growing up across California, you don't really hear that this is even a job, what I do. I had no idea until I got to college that, oh, people, this is someone's job, is to make memes for a living or to make hype videos for a living, right? I thought that was just a fun thing that my friends do and whatnot. But no, like, it's a big thing. And honestly, when I started college, it was still 16:9 videos on Instagram, and Twitter, and all these other places. And to be honest, the industry has grown so much in the 7 years that I've been a part of it, which, 7 years. Wow. Okay. But I think when I really started to believe that this could be a job for me is when I went to Spectrum Sportsnet and I saw that, oh, wow, people really storytell all the time about sports. And it's not just the boring kind of sit down, just highlights things, but people are really storytelling, I guess, and showing the behind the scenes of the athletes' lives. And the more that I got to do it on that level and see that it was a real profession and people who were much older than me who love sports just as much as I did and love storytelling just as much as I do are doing this, I was inspired by it. And I said, wow, I would love to do this at a different level than just college.
When you're going through and you're interning with all these, who are some of the people that were kind of helping you along the way and teaching you game to kind of really pour into you? Or were you just kind of like a lot of other creatives just learning a lot from, you know, YouTube universe?
Yeah. So I think one, just starting at my church, there's a guy, Peter Fenty. I still freelance with him a little bit today. He does just so much of the technical side of cameras, the technical side of production. And when I got to my church, he really was asking me what I wanted to try. And he gave me the opportunity to learn light, sound, directing, technical directing, all of it. And just gave me the opportunity to learn and grow and make my mistakes and see what I wanted to do. And when I said that I liked something, he let me continue to do it. And again, taught me all the technicalities. I would say the same thing probably about Rich Rodriguez at USC. Again, nobody was really making any content for the women's basketball and track teams. And he said, if that's what you want to do, go ahead and do it. Go out there and try. And we can just shoot it. And then we can go back and edit and see what you got, and we can go through your footage and see what's a good shot, what's not a good shot. And I really got to, at the time, nobody, I don't want to say no one cared, but it wasn't an emphasis to make collegiate content for sports that weren't football. And so to have kind of the free reign on those kind of sports, and sometimes I look back at those pages and wonder, why did they even let me make this? This is so bad. But just having that opportunity, and then I would say, at the Chargers, Tyler Pino, who's my current boss today, just taught me the business of sport and taught me what it really means to kind of storytell within sport and with the little things that are really important as it relates to making good content, scheduling it, seeing what works, what doesn't. And he's won a couple sports Emmys when he worked for the New York Jets. I'm sorry. He would hate that I just said that, but the New York Jets, and learning what it means to make long form sports content and to be a professional in this business. And so I would just say those three guys are just wonderful mentors to me. And finally, I would say Aurora Ferlin, who again worked with me at my church, and she is a technical director. She's a writer on The Equalizer right now. And when it comes to writing, when it came to filming, when it came to, hey, when you're technical directing a show, whether it was, I've worked with them on Essence, Things for Beam, Things for the NAACP Awards, BET Awards, things like that. What are we looking at? What are you trying? What are the main things that you need to be focused on as a director? How do you talk to the other people on production? How do you make sure that you're still going towards the end goal? And so those types of things. She was just so, first of all, just forward herself and what she was doing and how she's innovating in her own lane. So then to just see another woman in that position and to give me those notes as she saw them and just give me the ropes of the game was super, super important.
Your time working at USC, working with different sports, you know, you mentioned track and field, you mentioned women's basketball, and how, you know, at the time there weren't a lot of, you know, there wasn't a lot of coverage for some of that. Over the last couple of years, especially since the pandemic kind of slowed down a little bit, we've seen a shift in an uptick in coverage of Olympic sports, women's basketball. Like, what would be your take on the excitement that has now been built? Which is, this is stuff that has been covered at some schools for a long time, but now nationally, everybody has a media team that's covering, you know, tennis and basketball and track and all that.
Man, women's basketball is skyrocketed. And it makes me sad because USC women's basketball is awesome. And I'm like, oh, this is what I would do if I was still there with all the star power they have for sure. And like you said, there was definitely some schools such as UConn, Notre Dame, Stanford, who already had kind of that uptick and was already making content for their teams because they were so good. Those were the dynasties of the time. But I would say, what has happened for one is the audience has changed, right? I think the college athletic space is very much dictated by recruiting, to be honest, and what the kids are looking at and how do you get kids to come to your school? How do you get kids to join your team? And a lot of that has to do with your social media presence and the graphics and the videos. Kids these days are looking at that. What does your page look like? What does your brand look like? And a lot of that has to do with the media teams that exist. And so even while I was at USC, while I was interning, there was a huge shift in coaches and administrators and everyone else really caring what you were doing. Before, it was kind of, oh, this is just a fun job. Those are the people on the sideline who just take photos and video. But now it's, hey, what does our Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, what does it look like? What type of media are we putting on those platforms? And they've started to really zero in on that, and coaches on women's basketball teams, tennis teams, all of that are saying, hey, to the administrators and saying, we need these people. We need these people who know how to build a brand, who know how to film, edit, who know how to reach the kids of today. And that just happens to be us.
Yeah, that's great. So you were a student at USC. You ended up going to the Chargers. I went back to USC and then back to the Chargers. I think it's really important for people to understand how not to burn bridges. And obviously you've made your contacts and have kept those relationships alive and well. How did you navigate going through that and taking on jobs and roles and leaving a previous employer while still having the door open to be able to come back and maintain a really good relationship that way?
That's absolutely correct. In the media business, especially, or in production, to be honest, whether you're working in film and television or you're working in sports media, it's a small world. Everybody knows each other, even when you don't think that they do. And so maintaining relationships, maintaining a great work ethic, and just being a really good person is extremely important. I think for me, a little bit of what helped me was when I graduated as an intern for USC, there wasn't a job open, so I had to go somewhere else. And then when I finished at the Chargers for the first time, that PA position, which for those of you who don't know, just about every NFL team during the season takes in PAs and interns. Those media teams are looking for kids who are just coming out of college, or if you just want to learn how to be on a media team and if you already have a portfolio and things like that, they're looking for it. I just got a couple of my old interns at USC, a few jobs in the NFL as well, by sending them those applications. So they're looking for that. And those are seasonal internships. You do get paid, but you get unbelievable experience being on the sideline and working for these NFL media teams. And so that's what I was doing as well. And by the end of my time there, they did offer me. But by the time that they offered me, I'd already gotten a job back at USC because they called me and wanted me back. And they had a position open now. And so that's kind of how I got the USC job. And then for the Chargers in particular, I just kept in contact with folks. And I told my boss, and I think this is really important, and I didn't know this coming out of college, but it's important that your boss knows and important that folks know at the job that you are, what you want to do, what your end goal is. So long form was a really big thing for me that I wanted to learn, that I wanted to be a part of. I wanted to be a part of productions. I wanted to write. I wanted to produce. And when that type of job opened up at the Chargers, when they were trying to expand, my boss now, Tyler, called me and said, "Hey, are you interested in this?" And even if I hadn't taken this job at the time, it's really important just to keep those communication lines open and to talk about what your goals are, to talk about what the things that you like, the things that you're seeing that are part of the industry. And I think that's really the main thing. And then for USC, it just happens to be my alma mater. I love the folks over there. I still freelance at times for them. And while I was there, I just made as many connections as I could. And again, just remained resilient and hardworking and dependable. I think that's the biggest thing. People are really looking for people who are dependable, who are personable, and people who are good at what they do. And if you keep those lines of communication open and check in and ask people how they're doing, they'll remember you when the time comes to get a job.
You read my mind. That was going to be my next question. What kind of traits do you think the people, the hiring managers that you worked with or your bosses when you worked there, what was memorable to them? And did you have those conversations with them, like exit interview style, or throughout your time there, where you felt like you would have an opportunity to come back down the line, even if it wasn't right away?
I don't know if I had thought, oh yeah, I'm going to come back. Both times that I went back to the places that I went to, it wasn't planned, I would say. But what I would say is wherever you're at in your career, it's important that your boss and folks above you know what your goals are. Like I said, what you're really interested in. And those can happen in exit interviews or in your, you know, yearly interview, or just when your boss asks to sit down and how are you, you know, you could talk about those things and see if their goals for you align with yours, as well as if you see something that you like or you have an idea, especially in the creative space. Something that I love at the Chargers is we're so collaborative, and we have these meetings where when we're brainstorming, what do we want to do for the season? You can point out and bring media that you really, really like. And that's also expressing your interest. And so I think it's a process throughout the entirety of your employment. And it's also there on those really, I don't want to say serious meetings, but in those very, in those end of the year meetings, like you're talking about, and which is more sit down and more one-on-one time, but you can really express those things wherever you're at. Or if you see a good shot, like what we do as well at the Chargers is we have an entire page, a Slack page, where we just put in, oh my goodness, did you guys see this media? Or did you see this type of thing? Or, hey, look at this short animation that somebody made. What if we did this? Or I'm really interested in this. I really like this. Can I try it? And especially in the off season, my boss has been so open with, hey, if you guys have seen something that you like and you want to try it, try it. If you have time, right, get your work done, but try it. Let's see if we can do it. And he's always been open to that. And that's how you really let folks know what you want to do.
I'm going to back up a little bit, because I always like to ask the question when people have the chance to work at their alma mater. You you made an interesting point when you said that, you know, there wasn't a job available when you first graduated, but not long after you had the opportunity to actually work at your alma mater. Do you think that there was a difference by you? I mean, you didn't go out far because you went to work with the Chargers, but did you think that there was a benefit of leaving campus and then, you know, getting experience somewhere else and bringing that back?
100%. 100%. I think when you're a part of a brand or you're a part of, especially SC, man, I love USC so much. And so I think I just had a great 4 years there as a student. I learned so much just generally about myself as a person. And I love sports and got to do a lot of what I wanted there. But when you're trying to build yourself as a creative, it's important that you see what other folks are doing. It's important that you are exposed to other ways of working, other ways of seeing things, because we're trying to tell the story of a life, right? We're trying to tell the story of these athletes. We're trying to tell the story of sport and people. And you can't always do it one way, right? One brand's way is not another brand's way. And I think the ways in which folks do things, or the way the goals that they're setting is different, and college and the NFL are completely different. And so I think learning the business side from the Chargers was unbelievably helpful. Even when I went back, you know, I went back to USC and I said, guys, we could be so much better in these areas because the college space hasn't tackled them yet. What if we did this? And I just came with so many more ideas that I never would have gotten the exposure to if I didn't go to the Chargers or go somewhere else. And even when I talk to my friends who work at the Rams or work at the Saints and the Pelicans and the Bengals and stuff like that, I'm like, what? You guys did this? That's crazy. This is kind of how we go about it, and just getting inspiration that way. And that's one thing that's really important, I think, as well, staying inspired, staying open to new ways of creating, because the way that you do things is probably going to change just as media changes every year.
That's a great answer.
I appreciate that, Darius.
What are some of the differences in working in college and working in the NFL? Like, are they very similar, or is there like a big difference in working? I know some of the, you know, NFL rules as it pertains to media is a little different. But what's your take on what's the major or the biggest difference between the two and what's kind of similar?
You're absolutely right about that. They're very different. I would say they're similar in terms of we're just trying to tell stories, right? We're trying to tell the stories of the folks that play for your organization / your college. You're trying to get to know them better. You're trying to document their success. I would say that folks on the media team are also historians, right? We're showing what happened. We're gathering, collecting footage and data about what happened, whether someone's beating a record or when they get signed, things like that. These are people's lives that we're documenting in a way. So that's very similar. But I would say that the NFL is definitely just a different business because it is closed. There's only 32 teams. There's only so many players that are a part of this. And it's only one team, right? When I come to the Chargers, I only have, by the time we start season, there are 53 guys that I'm focused on and telling those 53 stories. And it might even be less, depending on who starts, who plays, who gets injured, things like that. But when you're in the college space, what you're trying to juggle is 21 teams, if we're talking about USC, and you're trying to balance all of that with not as big of a media team, I would say. I think I got blessed when I came to the Chargers. We have about 16 people in our content department. That's huge. Whereas at USC, there was only five full-time video folks working for 21 sports. And so there's only so much that you can kind of do without burning out. So I think that's different. I think, like you said, the rules as it relates to the NFL, what you can and can't do, it's all for the collective benefit of ticket sales, of sponsorships. The way that you can incorporate sponsorships are different. Sometimes at USC, I didn't have to worry about sponsorships, really. I just got to do whatever I want, and we can slap a logo on it and call it a day. But that's not necessarily true for the NFL at all. Everyone's always looking at what you're doing. There's rules about when you can post what you're doing. And so I think those are probably the biggest differences, I would say, within the college space and the NFL space. And I think the college space, you still need some resources to make as much content as I think the demand is going up, as the demand gets larger. And that just hasn't caught up yet. I think it will very soon, but I don't think they're there just yet, unless you work for football. Some football teams have 4 or 5 folks working just for football, but the other teams aren't necessarily there yet, I would say.
It's almost more money, more problems, right?
Absolutely.
But money's a good thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, but to piggyback off of that, I also wanted to ask what differences, because you're in more long-form focused content, I'm curious to get your perspective on whether you repurpose any of the content that you capture or produce for long form into short form, and if you do, how you go about it. Just because you mentioned the recruiting aspect, obviously, in college is the main focus, and you having the interest in long form, I'm curious if you kind of used your eye and your expertise in the long form to benefit the short form by keeping it or leveraging a story in a short form.
Well, I think one of the ways that I do that now today at the Chargers is YouTube is huge for us. We put a lot of content on YouTube, and that's longer form video. And we have to learn how to, well, what was the most interesting action bite-sized part of this that I can put on social media, right? None of these platforms for the Chargers work in isolation. Whereas in college, at sometimes different platforms worked very solo. But for the Chargers, it's no, we are pushing people to watch all of our stuff. We want to make sure that everything that we make, especially if it's great, we're making great stuff, we want everybody to see it. The audience that we have on TikTok isn't necessarily the same audience that we have on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube. And so how do we make sure that everybody's seeing it? And if they want to see more of it, they know where to go. And so I think I've been able to learn, one, how to take bite-sized pieces of long form for sure. But then also what I've learned is how each thing needs to be cut. A long form segment needs to be cut differently than a short form segment. There needs to be different caption sizes, different fun bits to make it engaging on the platform that you're using. And I think those are some of the things that I've learned. And I think short form also informs the way that I make long form when I'm making segments. How do I make a segment just as energetic or flow as well as I need it to? How do I give more space in long form and let the music breathe or let the build a scene, really? Because on Instagram or TikTok, you don't really have time to build a scene. You got to kind of get to the point. And so I think all of these things have helped me as I've continued to edit and move forward within the spaces of short form and within the spaces of long form, as I still do both. The long form is still my focus, but I do have to make teases, or I have to make, when it came to even the call to the pick that we had for Brendan Rice a while ago, a very emotional piece. How do I cut that down to make sure that I still get across the emotion that I need to, but have it be under a minute, whereas the actual call was 5 minutes.
What's been, I know you mentioned the Brendan Rice one, and that was a really emotional, but also great storytelling piece. So great job on that. What's been some of
the... Thank you. I appreciate that. That's my guy. I see, you know.
Absolutely. So was it... Well, let's, you know, stick to that piece for a second. Was that kind of being able to do that for someone that you've been around before? It wasn't like, you know, some kid that you didn't know or whatever. But working on pieces like that where you know the person, you know the emotion, and you know how they kind of operate, to be able to do a story with him at such a pivotal yet low moment for him, you know, having to deal with that on draft weekend. Like, what was that experience like?
Right. So for those who don't know, Brendan Rice was wide receiver at USC. His father is Jerry Rice, and he got drafted to the Chargers in the 7th round. But he got that call while he was headed to a funeral for one of his best friends when he played at Colorado before he had transferred to USC. So I cut that call between our general manager, Joe Hortiz, our head coach, Jim Harbaugh, our owners, the Spanos family, and Brendan. And when he was getting that call to let him know, when they were calling him to let him know that he would be a Charger. And like you said, Darius, I think when you know someone documenting, again, what it is to be alive, what it means to live alive, these historical big pivotal moments, to use a Spider-Verse reference, like these canon events, right, in their life is so special. And to know just how hard he's worked, right, to be around him before, it does feel a little sweeter. It does, to be able to edit that. And when we were talking about the best way to put this call to the pick together, that was a part of the conversation. How do we make sure that we get the emotion and get the depth out, right? Every call to the pick is different. Some calls are everybody celebrating in the back and everybody's happy. Some calls, the guy just goes into a empty part of the house and it's just him and the coach and they're just like, great, you're on the team. And that's the end of the call. But the great thing, again, about the Chargers is we do this collaboratively. Whenever we get a call to the pick, we watch and we say, okay, this is how we want to attack it. And because that pick had so much context going, my boss let us know, hey, I want to do a longer story tell to this. Let's make this a 3-minute thing instead of the usual 45 second to 1 minute. And he said, we watched it together, me, him, and one of our other lead editors. And we kind of said, okay, these parts are really great. These are the parts that we want to make sure that we're in it. We have these four other angles. Let's try to get another angle if possible. And we really took our time with it as well. We didn't want to put it out. You wanted to put it out, right, close to the draft, close to when he gets drafted and before other folks are getting signed. But you wanted to make sure that you did him justice. Again, these are guys' lives that you're talking about. These are moments that they won't forget for sure. And we're putting it out to the world. And it's our responsibility to make sure that we, like I said, do them justice and be respectful of what's going on. And so for me, I wanted to make sure when it came to the music that I was picking, when it came to the cuts, when it came to just what I was putting in the actual piece, that I was being mindful of all of it. And it was a process of a lot of going back and forth with, hey, what about this? What if I cut it like this? This is the original cut in drafting. Or what does this song, do I switch songs in the middle? No, let's keep it. Let's make sure that we have a piece that gives context for the audience and whatnot. So it was a process. It was a collaborative process of me editing it and sending it off and watching it over and over again. And it just felt so sweet to be able to, like I said, document this guy's moment in his life. And when I saw him in the building, I was like, my guy, well, welcome to the Chargers. And he's like, I'm happy to be here. So happy to be here. And that feels good as well, as to have those moments of, again, just capturing moments in guys' lives and being able to connect with them in such a different way. So it felt great. Plus, he's a Trojan, like I said. So, I mean, I'm for everybody who comes out of SC.
I love the bias. I love it. So speaking of LA, you know, there are not a lot of places that have a big collegiate brand in a city. There, you know, we've talked about this on a couple of instances where it's SC, it's UT Austin, University of Miami. Don't know if I can
Michigan,
really...
Ohio State, probably.
They're not in like big cities though. Like top.
Oh,
like,
you're talking about big city media?
None of those are in like top 10. Well, Austin just got kicked out of top 10 largest cities. Shout out to Austin.
Right.
But being able to be around that much exposure, especially like LA. LA's got to be, you know, aside from like New York, is the top of the top in exposure, right? How much does that help or maybe hinder what you're wanting to do professionally and personally?
I think it helps, one, because it's always on our minds whenever you work for any type of media production company or when you're just a creative in LA, you know that. It's just something that, I don't want to say a big cloud, but it's in the back of your mind. You know, hey, I've got to deliver. I've got to do things at the highest level because there's 10,000 other people in the city that's doing it. Or there's 10 others, like when we talk about the Chargers in particular, how many sports teams do we have in LA? Like, you know, everybody's looking for attention from the customer. And if they don't want to go to a game on Sunday, they could go to the beach or they could go to Disneyland or they could go to Knott's Berry Farm or Six Flags. They could go to Griffith Park. Like, there's so many other attractions in LA that you're kind of fighting for attention for. And so for one, it helps because the teams know that, your bosses know that. And so they're investing resources in what you do so that you can make the best possible thing. I think personally, it inspires me a lot just to be around so many creatives all the time, people who are trying new things all the time. It pushes me to be excellent all the time. And so I think it helps me that way. I think it's been such a big emphasis for the Chargers, especially moving to Los Angeles. How do we make our imprint? How do we do that brand-wise? And it allows us to be creative. It allows us to bounce ideas between each other and with each other and just try new things. It really pushes you forward when you know that there's so much out there to be done and there's so many excellent people around you, first of all, that you get to collaborate with, and so many excellent people around the city that are trying to do the same thing you're doing.
Speaking of which, what are some things that you like to do to kind of get away from the grind of NFL season or working in the NFL life? You know, a lot of people look at it and say, oh, well, it's only 17 weeks out of the year, but you also have training camp and you also have draft prep and, you know, community events and all that. So what do you personally do to get away from all of it?
Yeah, you're right about that, Darius. It is not just 17 weeks, man. It is sometimes just these pockets of really, really dialing down and getting a lot of stuff done. And obviously season is season. Training camp is a thing. Next week we start OTAs, which is another time of just buckling in and getting a lot of content done. So it kind of comes in waves, to be honest. And something I really like to do is when I have those opportunities, when there's a holiday, I get away for the weekend, go somewhere into nature where I can feel grounded, where I can go for runs, where I can connect to what's around me. I still write features and TV scripts. That's what I went to school for. And so I'm continuously doing that, just trying to get inspired on how to tell a different story, how to slow down, how to get out of the kind of the high-paced flow of everything. And I think that just means getting into my body, getting back into what I like to do, getting back into, just reaching back into my mind and saying like, okay, well, where am I at right now? And really refocusing before I go back into the never-ending world of sports, you know?
So what kind of movie script or show script can we expect to be produced in the near future or down the line?
Well, to be honest, I mean, I never mind talking about it a little bit. But lately, I was just at D.C. My sister just graduated from Howard. Shout out to her.
H.U.
Love her. Congratulations. Yes, H.U., you know. She's the second graduate of a HBCU in my family. My mother, well, let me say in my immediate family, I think my grandparents and folks also went to HBCUs growing up in Tennessee in the South. But my mother went to Howard and she went to Howard. My dad went to SC. I went to SC. So a little bit of a rivalry there of how many kids are going to end up going to those schools and grandkids and whatnot. But that was amazing because I went to the Smithsonian, the African American History Museum. And I don't know if you've ever been there, man, but it is so just, there's so much information. It's so dense, but it's also just bite-sized and you're able to grasp the stories of so many different people. And so I've been, and in different genres as well of these stories, when it comes to Westerns or it comes to just these, to rock and roll, just the great Black entertainers and people who lived, who don't always get the shine, and their contributions to the world, to America, are often not seen or not really talked about. And so I took a list of all the Black women that I saw that I found interesting. And I've been researching a few of them lately, and that's what I'm looking to make an action movie about, one of the famous Western cowgirls that I saw out there who was taking names and kicking butt out there. And I love that. And so it just reminded me of some of the stuff that I had seen lately. And I was like, you know what, let me see what she's really about. So that's what I'm outlining right now. It should be great. When I get free time, when I go out to, you know, run and things like that, that's what I'm thinking about.
That's awesome. So we talked a little bit about story and how being long form focused. How does your writing or scripting come into play when you're trying to develop a narrative for your long form content?
So for sports, it's you don't always know what the happy ending is going to be, right? When you're making a story for yourself, you can put all the beats together and you're like, yes. And then at the end of this sports movie, they win. That's not always true in real life at all. And so what what ends up happening is you collect all of this data, all of this footage, all of these things that are happening all at once. And then you have to create a through line for what's going on. And what's the story from a logical, technical aspect, right? Like football games are won and lost in X and O's sometimes. What's that story? What's the story of the guy who maybe had made a play, and what's his story off the field, right? So we had a player last year, Kenneth Murray. He loved to scuba dive, and that was how he cleared his mind, and that's how he was going into season. So how do you fit that into a game-winning interception that he made when we played for the Vikings, right? So it's a lot of that type of writing it down. How do we connect this? What's the theme? You're really taking the bones of, I would say, the screenwriting stuff that I learned at USC, and then connecting it as you see things unfold, I would say.
So you're just talking about, you know, the script writing aspect and how you use that within your long form content. With the cadence of content that you produce in the NFL, where it's basically like a week to week thing, do you produce content earlier in the season that could be evergreen content? Or is everything that you produce on a week-to-week basis reactive or proactive in any way?
Both. So with my particular job, everything that we shoot is useful at some point, right? Even stuff that is in OTAs next week when Coach Harbaugh is talking about the culture that he wants to create here, or the off-season programming videos that we have going out, all of that can be eventually used, especially if there's a guy has a big moment during the season, right? We want to be able to take you back and give you that all access look at just video maybe that's already been out, but in a different way, or something you've never seen before. So it's always, I think, anything that we shoot, and we think of it this way as well, is everything is evergreen, especially in the long form space, especially in the documentary space, right? You don't know how it's all going to play out. And so whether we lose or whether a guy goes down with an injury, you shoot that, you film that. And not just because, again, we're documenting folks' lives and that these things are just important as well as for content versions, but because you never know what's going to matter at the end of the things, right? And or when something is going to play out, when a specific scheme or when an idea that was floated about. So last year we had a celebration committee, and folks were talking about that earlier in the season, but it didn't come to fruition later. If we hadn't shot it or we hadn't banked it, we can't give you the plant and payoff that comes later. And so I think everything is evergreen, something that we talk about as well in the documentary space. And because we're not tied to a studio, right, you have these TV shows that we have to put out something every week. Last year, we were doing it every 2 weeks, so we had a couple games to think about things. Obviously, you want to make sure that you strike when the iron's hot and put out as much content as possible on a big moment. So, for example, like I was saying last year with that a couple minutes ago with that game-winning interception by Kenneth Murray, we'll put out that clip, right? We'll put out that play in a different context, but then for a long-form piece, we can put all the other footage that we have around that, and we can support it differently. And again, use those beats, as I was talking about, that you learn in film school about, oh, this is the dark night of the soul. And then we can put that here, and then we could build the stakes here and really just give it more breath. And so I think, one, knowing how you're going to use the footage is important, right? Like, what's important about this particular thing that happened? How do you want to support it? How do you want to use each platform? Because maybe a short clip of the interception goes viral on TikTok or Instagram or Twitter wants to see it, but maybe not YouTube, right? YouTube, you want a longer video of something or whatnot. So understanding that process as well really, really is important.
I like to hear that I wasn't the only person who was a hoarder of content. But how do you think about keeping content and keeping relevant content? Or is it everything is just in the archive and you have different tiers of storage or something? How do you all think about that?
You got to hoard content in documentaries. You really do. Because like I said, you just don't know what's going to play out every year. You don't know. If we talked about the passing game last year a lot, but that didn't play out till later in the season. Or you talk about just certain players are talking about their story, and maybe he hasn't had a breakout game yet, but you bank it. So just in case he does, bam, we got it. We're ready to go. And someone's clocked it. Or you listen to all those interviews, and we listen to radio. We have TV records. I mean, we know if you're talking about the Chargers, we probably know about it. And we note it. And it's in our library. And because there's so many people a part of our squad, the people you're working with 16 people's memories of what might have been said, or did this player, or content that we've made years ago about a certain player, and they know, hey man, at the NFL 100, so and so said this about Derwin James. Can we use that now? Oh, absolutely. But to answer your question a little bit, it's you have to archive it at some point, right? All of these things take up massive storage space on your databases, so you do have to archive things. In the college space, I would say you keep things basically for 4 years, right? If that player is there for 4 years or 5 years, let's say, everything that you have on them is accessible. Unless they're maybe in the WNBA, NBA, they play professional. You keep like their senior accolades ready to go, or any of those big moments in their careers ready to go so that you can pull it. But you do have to eventually archive things. Or when in the NFL, right, when a guy leaves your organization, you know, you archive some of that stuff, but you can still access it at any point. I think on a personal level for me, I had to buy storage basically, because I knew, hey, these are things that I've shot. They need to go somewhere. So I have just stacks of hard drives that are from each year, so that if there is something or somebody asks me about something I shot a long time ago, because sports do that when you freelance sometimes, especially WNBA or NWSL. Hey, you remember we had you shoot this 2 years ago, a community event? Do you still have some of that footage? And you got to go back and find it. So it's always great to have it, I think. And to have it in a place that where you can easily access it, and that you're organized. I cannot stress that enough. You have to be organized in this job. I know a lot of people are just working off of files on their computer that are not named and not logged, but it gets so much harder to find, guys, if it's not organized and not put somewhere where you can just pull it, because people are going to ask you to pull it.
So shifting on content, obviously in the space of sports, there are wins and losses, right? How do you,
yes, sir.
How do you navigate that? And what's kind of the policy of storytelling from your point of view on if a team loses, or being able to be really good at storytelling to where it doesn't matter if it's a win or a loss?
That's something I would say that we focused in a lot on All In last year. The year did not go the way that we had planned it to go. And that's not, you know, you start a documentary believing that your team's going to win the Super Bowl. That's how you go about it. That's how you build expectation. Obviously with a lot of reality in there, obviously, but with the thought process that this season is going to go well. And that ended up it did not end up that way for us. And so we had a lot of conversations, again, collaboratively, the three of us that were making the show, with my boss, our head producer, all of that, working with everyone, basically PR, social media. How do we pull individual stories that are meaningful, right? Because just because it's a loss doesn't mean that nobody had a good game, right? Not every loss is a huge, everything was a disaster, right? And so it really, first of all, challenges your storytelling. Can you make a good story when things aren't going the way that you need it to go? It's very much like life. Can you handle adversity and come up on the other side of it? Can you find themes? What are the things that did go well? What is the story here? And sometimes when it comes to losses, you have to sit in that as well. We had an episode that was about the bounce back, about the guys going into the meeting rooms, what the everyday life of is in the NFL. Of, we lost last week. We got spanked last week, and we still have to come to work. And so we kind of took that same thought process of, hey, when there's a loss, how do we want to storytell? What are the themes that are here? What are the themes that the team is working on? Because just because, you know, fans get really upset about something, or they believe that everything's over, nah, those guys still got to go out on the field and execute again, learn a completely different offense or defensive scheme to play against this next week. And so that's kind of how we did it. And as well as knowing, reading the room, I think something that's big about content that I learned, especially in this past year, is reading the room. Do your fans want to hear a happy story right now? Who do your fans want to hear from right now, or what's important and what's not, right? The tone of the things that you post or the things that you make has to match the temperature. You can't just ignore things. You can't just move on just because you want to. You have to revel in it. You have to sit there and you have to, again, challenge your storytelling ability and say, well, what is it that we can focus on? Or is this a moment where we have to divert a little bit and try something different? I know that we want to tell this story, but is it the right time? And things of that sort. So that's kind of how you deal with losing. When you win, you can just about post anything you want, to be honest. And then the people will eat it up for sure. Winning helps a lot of things. I think our coach said that. He's like, winning has cured more things than penicillin. I think that was like, that's a Jim Harbaugh quote right there. And I can tell you from working for a lot of different teams that that's fair. It's a fair assessment.
That sounds like something he would say.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say, I think you're gonna get quite a few sound bites this year.
Absolutely.
No, I love it.
Going forward. Yeah.
I love it. Film and practice, I hear it all. And he's definitely got a lot of quotes for us that I'll be using. Enthusiasm every day. I forget the exact word for it. He's there every day. There every day is a thing that he loves to emphasize, the same every day, being consistent. Oh, and bring an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. And I love it. I love it.
All right, we're going to play a little game here, a little quick game.
Yikes.
You can't see my face, so. But we're going to play a game. So we talked about LA and the, you know, extravagant number of things to do there. So you get 30 seconds to name as many must-do things as a person who lives or is visiting LA. Like, what are, like, as many things to name?
When you say LA, does it have to be LA County, or can it be things that you can access an hour away from what is literally LA County?
A 35-minute radius? Hours cool. I mean, I live 35 minutes from downtown in Austin. So
as does everybody with traffic, yeah. Everybody's about 45 minutes.
Los
away.
Angeles, well, you know, whether that's Orange County, LA County, you know, all of those things. But I'm going to get I'm going to get the timer started over here, and you know, I just gave you a few extra seconds to be able to work with. So
to think,
are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Right, 3, 2, 1, go.
Go to Big Bear. You can surf at the beach. You can lay around at the beach. You can go to Griffith Park Observatory, go into downtown. There's gaming arcades over there. You can go to Malibu. You can go to, I was going to say Nobu, just name all the restaurants in Malibu. Come down. You can ski. You can snowboard. You can go jet skiing. You can go to the Alamo Draft House. You can go to the TCL Chinese Theater. You can go into Hollywood. You can go see the Walk of Fame. And you can go 30. To the Staples Center.
You have officially, out of all the games we've played this season, I think that you may have gotten the most. That was about 13 or 14. So,
hey, go to In-N-Out as well. Sorry.
Please don't. We're not doing that. We're not doing that on this show.
Don't tell me like Whataburger, bro. That is not real. Come on, bro.
Listen, we're not going to go there. The In-N-Out burger is really good. It's great. The fries are trash. They're fresh. So to wrap these
shame.
Shameless plug, right? Whataburger. What is kind of a two-part question. What's some of the best advice that you've given? I mean, that you've gotten over the years, and what is some advice that you would have for creatives who are looking to, who are either looking to get into this industry or are very young in this industry and are looking to, or even people who've been around a while? Like, what's some advice that you have for creatives?
Some of the best advice I'd ever gotten, two things. One was from Issa Rae when she came to USC once. And she said, so many people are trying to network up. You should be networking around you, especially in the creative space. You can make things today was another thing that I think she said. And she's saying, if you work in creative, you can edit. There's so much access to cinema cameras to editing software. And obviously some of this stuff is expensive, but you can rent it out if you have a friend who has a camera. And people who know how to film, people who know how to edit, people in my position or my boss's position, whatnot, we can tell if you can shoot or not. Whatever camera you got, we can tell if you have an eye, or we can tell if you can edit, right? Or if you have a passion for something. It comes out in the work that you have. I think, especially in storytelling, we know if you understand the beats of a story by how you tell a story. So I think just do it today, and then network around you. If you want to make something with your friends, do it. You know, these are the folks that'll lift you up. All of us, I think, are in positions in our career, and I'm just 25 years old, where we're building and we're learning. And I've touched just about every LA team here, except for the Rams and maybe the Clippers. Not even the Clippers, actually. I did some work for the Clippers. I worked for the Sparks. I worked for all these different places. And same thing with my friends that are in LA, you know, working for different companies that are around. And so what ideas do they have? Work with them. Make things with them. Don't always look up at people that, oh, I want to work with so-and-so eventually, blah, blah, blah. Your friend next to you is the next so-and-so, right? The next Issa Rae, the next Shirley Ralph, the next, you know, Quinta Brunson, all these people, the people that you see every day, the people that you're networking with today could just as well become exactly who you're trying to be in the future, or the people that you look up to. So make sure that you're keeping in touch and working with them. And I think, yeah, so network sideways, not just up and down. And then I would say the next best advice would be, if you're afraid, just do it afraid. And there's, I think, especially if after you graduate college, at least for me, there's this thought process of, I'm not ready to do something, or, oh my goodness, life is not as easy as I thought it would be when I was younger. And there's this kind of fear of trying something new, or let me just do what has gotten me, you know, as far as I am today and continue to do that. And there's things that are going to scare you. There's career moves that are going to scare you. There's, oh, I don't really know how to make that type of thing. Just do it afraid. It's okay if you're afraid. It's okay if you have reservations about something. Just do it with those reservations. Do it regardless, I think it was also a great set of advice. And that's kind of how I've gone about what I do. If you're afraid of it, you think you're going to make a mistake, that's fine. Just make the mistake then. And learn from that and keep it pushing. So I would say that's the best advice that I've gotten so far. And I would give that same advice, to be honest, to all of the folks out there who want to be creatives or want to work in the sports space. And I told my interns that before I left USC as well. Just if you're afraid, do it afraid, network sideways, keep in touch with people. That's big. USC really emphasizes that when I was there, you know, network, 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 but really just keep in touch with people. When somebody makes something cool, tell them about it, DM them about it, right? The social space is huge. Tell them that I love this. This was awesome. How did you do this? And create those little connections everywhere. So if you want to work with somebody in the future, you have the opportunity, or if they have a job open, they're thinking of you.
That's great advice. Justin, any other thoughts or questions?
Yes, you gave advice on, you know, getting in the industry, making sure that you maintain your contacts and keeping yourself top of mind with people, not for the sake of necessarily getting a job or working with somebody, but to maintain a relationship with them so that if you have a question or they have a question, that you have somebody to work with and bounce thoughts off of and get a different perspective. When it comes to more specifically what you do as a in long form content, if somebody has an interest there, but maybe they're working more on the social side of content, what can you recommend for them to focus on and start to steer towards where they would like to go if they're not doing exactly what they want to be doing?
Sure. And actually, let me back up too, because I know to give some personal advice as well, take an off day, man. The job will be there in the morning when you wake up the next day. I promise. Take an off day, enjoy life. I think it was Audre Lorde or maybe Toni Morrison who said, life loves the liver. That might have been in Maya Angelou. One of those amazing literary Black women said, life loves the liver. And especially with what we do, like I said, we're the folks who are telling the human story. Viola Davis said, this is the only job where it's your job to tell the story of what it means to be alive. And so you can't do that if your cup is not full, if you're not in touch and grounded with the world around you and yourself and how you want to tell a story and how you see the world, right? Nobody sees the world necessarily how you see it. So make sure that you're taking those off days. Have a good day. Look at your life, be inspired by your life, and have a good time. But to answer your question, Justin, about social media, or if you're doing something that you don't want to do, I would say, one, be clear on what your goals are. If you want to be creating, if you want to be at a different level, make sure that you've written that down and you've thought about the steps to how to get there. I think one big thing for me and some of my friends of graduating, especially when you graduate from like an elite university, you think, okay, I'll graduate and immediately get a job and immediately be doing exactly what I want to be doing. That's not always how it works. And you just kind of have, okay, get a job as goal one. And then your 5-year plan is like a bunch of question marks. And then bam, dream job is number 5. And make sure that you're making, and that's not how it works either. So like make those increments for yourself. Know where you want to get, set your goals, I would say. And then in the social media space in particular, just be on with trends. Know what's going on. When you interview with places or when you ask teams, look at brands. Even if you work for a sports team, look at what Vogue is doing or look what Red Bull is doing. Look at what every brand that you have that's out right now, look at what you're wearing. What is Converse doing on their pages? What stories are they telling and how can you get inspired by all those other places? And then capture things. You can make your own content now, right? Like there's not just influencing, but just generally, if you want to see how something works, if you want to do it, just do it. As I was saying before, and set your goals for what you want to do and send those out to people and show it and build your audience and build your portfolio always. I know that that's kind of redundant for what I said earlier, but I really think that's how you do it and get to what you want to do. Stay focused and make good things, I should say.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day.
Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives.
If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.